Okay, so we have Karen and Marcy joining us digitally. We'll go around the room as we start. Just we have a number of, as we always do, new additions to the group, which is great. People slide in, people slide out. So the nature of life. So we'll go. I'm Barry. I'm convening this group, and I'm grateful that you're all here. If you could say your name.
I'm Brendan Rose.
Grace Novick.
Ruth Forstad.
And our digital friends.
Karen, with greetings from Jonathan Slater just half an hour ago.
Oh, okay.
And Marcy Ingber.
Great to have you all with us. And we are here for the next edition of Excited for that. And if you are new and would like to see what we've done in the past, the materials are in the packet. If you don't have a packet, I will get you a packet. And also they're available online at yutora.org on my new YUTora channel. You can see the channel there. All Shireem here will hopefully be recorded and published there. That's fun. That's Y, the letter Y, UTORAH.org, and I can send the link out to the group. And then if you go to teachers and click Barry Dollinger, and then click the teaching me dope thing, you'll see actually all but the first of our prior session. First session, the internet went out midway.
So you recorded all.
Yeah. The comments don't pick up. It's mainly me, but that's probably good anyway to protect people's private comments. No one's actually listened or downloaded them. I forget if that happened. I wouldn't know who, but I would know it happened. Only me testing it. Okay. So I think we'll start with just maybe 1 minute of a little bit of silence just to let us enter a more introspective place. I'll ask folks to just find your feet on the ground, as they often are. Oh, shy. We're just settling in. And bringing awareness of all the ambient noise, the melody of the water urn, all the stuff that's out there, it's all the way life is. And bringing awareness to the center of our bodies, turning, perhaps closing your eyes. Turning your attention to your breath, your natural breath in the body. Noting with curiosity its movements. And when your attention goes elsewhere, which it will, which is fine, just notice, I've drifted and come back a few times as often as you need to the breath, and we'll rest here for just a bit. Resting in the weight and presence of our bodies. Come back just from that little moment. We're not. whatever it was. And that's a bridge to what we're going to discuss tonight. Kavod. This is our unit. People should know the basic building blocks of Tikkun Midot are as follows, since we have a number of new people to the group. There's this learning session, which I hope is a good component for people to get the juices flowing. And then the real work of not just like understanding the concept, but of personalizing it, is to bring it into life in different ways. So for each unit, there's a Kabbalah, a thing you could do, ideally every day, something that's doable. It could be quick and easy. I'll go through suggestions that would relate to what we're learning in this unit as a way of actualizing it. So often our learning is an intellectual thing, but Torah learning is part intellect and the other part action. I like to quote the Talmudic debate in every class I give about which is greater, study, Talmud, or ma'aseh, action. And the Talmud concludes, Gadol Talmud, shemevi lidei ma'aseh, that study is greater because it leads to action. And I think that's a premise of this class, that with introspection, we might act wiser than if we just tried to act righteously, or if we only studied but left that as an intellectual exercise. That the idea of learning Torah together is to personalize it, or to lead us to act in particular ways, in ways we wouldn't if we didn't study. And so with that, I will enter into... So there's the Kabbalah. If that means something you accept on yourself. So I think you've like a resolution. Is it the new year in 2020? So people have this idea. So this is like a monthly resolution or a couple of weeks. Studies show, by the way, that resolutions for an entire year are kept at very low rates, but resolutions for short periods of time work. The timing is the key feature of a successful resolution. If you're looking to write a best-selling book, you might choose how to actually keep your resolutions. And the answer is to keep them under a month, actually. If you resolve to do maybe the whole next, I'm going to work out every Tuesday this year. You're not going to do it. But if you resolve to work out every Tuesday, the next week, you might. And it might become a habit. So in that way, that's part of this as well, as keeping it moving. So there's that, the thing you accept. And I'll give suggestions so you don't have to make it up. And there's also the focus phrase, a phrase that will help steer you, cause learning, inspire you, frustrate you, challenge you, whatever it might do. And it's a phrase I'll give suggestions again, or you could choose your own that relate to this. And in the very ideal world, you do his pilus with it, what we did the first session, maybe we'll do it again at some point, where you actually take the phrase and you go and you shout it, yell it, whisper it, talk it, write it, get to know it intimately so that it really begins to work on you. That's something that the Musar movement advanced. They called it hitpa'alut, or hispilus in the Ashkenazis. Yes, I bet they called it hispilus, not hitpa'alut, which means like self-acting, acting on yourself. So it's using text to transform yourself. So that's a Musar technique. And it's different than study. It's a little bit different. Maybe we'll do. But so you'll have a phrase that you can, some people that have been, several people have said they put it on their fridge or refrigerator, or on their car dashboard. I don't you drive. I be careful where on the dash, but those are good places to see them a lot, is the truth. Someone else put it on the side of their coffee pot, so they have to see it when they wake up. The back of your cell phone. So these are, I would recommend, you know, really considering taking the phrase and writing it somewhere that you'll see it. Probably more effective than just relying on your remembering. And with that, we'll move into the content. So those are just things that I hope people will be doing in between sessions. And there's also the chavruta. Some people are new here and may not have a chavruta study partner. There are other texts to work with. We won't get to them all in this session. So if you have a chavruta, or you're looking for a new chavruta, or your chavruta fell apart and you want to revive it, or whatever it is, just speak to me and we'll make sure if you want a chavruta, you have one. You could also do the study on your own. If that, I realize people have lives, it's complicated for folks, but you'll have the sources. So we'll move in now to Kavod. So this, if you turn in the packet, if you have it to page 101. 101.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Before we start the next topic, do you find that by doing this as a community, it becomes part of a community conversation?
Ah, okay. So maybe we should let's open that up for a minute. That's my hope, right? Is that is that by doing this, you know, with people from the community, that the methods and techniques of Musar introspection will become less foreign, not just to each of us individually, but we all belong to different parts of different communities, right? We have different places we circle in, and that this would begin to have like a ripple effect. I do kind of hope that, but I don't know if it's true. I think it probably would take more time to know that. But do you have, if anyone else wants to share a thought about what does it mean for groups of people within a community to do something where maybe not everyone is doing it, but some subsection are? I don't want to analyze too much, but
I just remember at the beginning you said you don't get self-righteous and you impose it on everybody around you. So I haven't been specifically not doing that, but I find myself wanting to.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, I was just bringing that up. Don't let me.
No.
Go ahead. Let's do. We can come out and kavod now.
Yeah. Right. Musar is complicated in that way because really it means kind of like rebuke, and there's a sense in which, you know, if you like discover something and then go rebuke other people, then that could be taken off in the wrong way. Mm. On the other hand, some people need to be rebuked. And so I'm not like, I think.
I was just curious. I don't.
Yeah, there's a form of infantilization whereby we assume that people aren't responsible to others, right? And just allow chaos to reign. There's obviously something in between, the gray area, where like you have a view of something and they have a different view, and there's like pluralistic respect for other people's ethical decisions. And there are times where people are just acting rudely. So, okay, kavod. Maybe this will help with all of that. Because kavod does really, it's about us and it's about others. So first, a definition. What does kavod mean? What is the shoresh, the Hebrew root of kavod?
Honor.
Honor. Mm. Honor. What's the shoresh? What's the root?
Heavy.
So it's kaf bet dalid, which really would mean heavy or weighty. Honor. So how are those concepts related? Heavy, weighty, honor.
Honor is heavy.
Honor is heavy.
Heavy means it's difficult to achieve.
Okay, it's hard.
It's important.
It's important.
I sort of think of it as like holy metals.
Heavy metals.
If you're being honored, like where you have like a chest of heavy metals.
Okay, like a general.
Like a general is like, you know, like.
When I think of heavier weighting, I think of like responsibility that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true here, but
yeah, there is no right or wrong. There's just how these associations work. Yeah, sure. I also tend to think about it in that way, that with honor comes a sort of heaviness of presence, something that's mm-hmm. heavy seems to work with that for me as an association.
Serious.
Yes.
Holy.
Think of someone having gravity or gravitas.
Gravitas, right? We use that word even.
Mm-hmm.
Bending space-time more. Perhaps. Is that what gravitas means?
It is. Someone has substance in them, and so that has a kind of weight to it.
Yeah. So let us read what David Jaffe says. Rabbi David Jaffe, dear friend and author of this curriculum. I'll just say one thing. Rabbi Yitz Greenberg, people may know, is the rabbi at the Riverdale Jewish Center for many years before founding Klal. really a Rebbean teacher of mine, every time he speaks, is the most primary thing in the Torah is the commandment that people are created in the image of God. And I think that this is intimately related in a religious sense to that primary commandment that Na'ase Adam B'Tzalmenu, let us make people in our image. That phrase connotes divinity in people, or godliness, or holiness. It's holiness, that the holiness of people is related to the honor which we might give them. I'll say also, for the philosophers in the room, if there are any, that I think Kant, Immanuel Kant, wrote a lot about this, with the notion that there's a sort of infinite honor or importance to each person, right? Not as a, not caused by like their station in life, but just as the fact that they're a person. There's an equal and infinite amount. Maybe we'll agree, maybe we'll not, but that's like a philosophical postulate of his that's pretty primary to his work. So I've sort of said like the religious end of the supposition, perhaps. Hey, welcome. And also maybe a philosophical starting point. Welcome. So good to have you. No, no, it's okay. So we're just reading now about honor. So maybe we'll take someone to read the opening. Kavod, honor. We'll work with honor, dignity, either any of those. It's about recognition. Someone to read. Sure.
So it's the first paragraph?
First paragraph, right there.
Kavod is about recognition, dignity, and honor. Who does not want kavod? Our mass media societies obsessed with public recognition, friends on Facebook and followers on Twitter, determine someone's status and success. I don't exempt myself from this yearning for kavod. For example, I cringe when I see those issues of magazines and newspapers that list the top 50 under 50, or the best this or that. Especially irksome to me are the lists of the most influential rabbis. My ego cries out, recognize me. The yearning for external recognition or public kavod comes from the ego. This part of our inner life is concerned primarily with ourselves and self-preservation to the exclusion of others. It is perfectly healthy to need recognition and attention. However, the intensity of the anger most of us feel over a minor slight to our dignity, such as having our name left off a list of people being publicly recognized, reveals something deep at play in us.
And so we come to the first discussion question. I think this one always gets me maybe a lot, maybe others as well, maybe not. What slights to your dignity get you most worked up? Anyone wants to?
True confession.
Humble, you don't feel that.
When the driver cuts me off, when I take it personally.
And someone like honks behind you.
Yeah.
I just get angry.
I'm not being recognized in social situation. Not, I don't mean recognized for your name or something, but just being not, no one paying attention.
Mm.
I mean, the first thing I thought of, it's not the only thing, but is when I don't get invited to a wedding or a simcha that I thought I should be invited to.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean she wants to.
Yeah. It doesn't mean necessarily you want to go, but it would be nice to be invited.
I find for me, actually, it's more like it could be really small, but if there's like a number of small ones in a row or on top of it, they tend to like build. Mm. So some very, very small slight makes me explode.
Mm. Lack of appreciation for something you do?
or not being heard in a discussion or being people.
Being mischaracterized, like when you do something in a particular way and then someone who like isn't there describes it in some totally other way than the way you perceive it.
Yeah.
Feeling taken advantage of.
Lately, I've worried that my sisters are not giving me the time of day. And this is particularly galling to my dignity because I feel like there's a structural obligation we have to each other, or something. And if that's not happening, or if that connection is not actually trustworthy, then it feels like a blow to my dignity. It's funny that this is coming at the end of the Joseph story.
Yes.
So are these feelings bad, or?
No, I think they're natural, but they could be. They might not be reflective of. Oh, well, I think we're just trying to chart right now. When do you feel slighted? I don't know if anyone is that like a bad feeling. I mean, it's not a pleasant feeling. It doesn't feel good. Is it bad to have that feeling? Is that what you're asking?
Well, yeah, like Chazal says, you shouldn't chase after them.
Ah, yeah, okay. So the question is, right, I think it was, I don't know if it's right, I think it was the Buddha who said you shouldn't be any more attached to praise than to critique. I could be wrong.
That's also in.
It could be anyone. It could be Chazal. It could be which is that one phrase said like that. But I think the point there, right, is that at least to the extent that like being recognized on a list or having someone else recognize what you've done or not, or maybe this gets into the social media conversation. There's a sense in which other people noting it or not really does not determine whether. Ought not determine whether that thing was worthwhile for us to do or not. Like who I am does not change if people do not like it. Right? And we wouldn't like, I think maybe we wouldn't like to think of ourselves, correct me if I'm wrong, as doing things because people will then like us for it. We would want to do it for other reasons primarily. Mm-hmm. Not that it's bad to be liked, but that's not the primary motivator of our ethical decisions in life. And yet, the lack of that, and similarly with critique, I think there's a lot of times in which we get advice that is not helpful advice or critique that we feel is off base. Sometimes we get critique from people who care about us that we feel is perhaps right and worth considering, right? Often those are people we care about. Most of we can hear the critique, but a lot of times critique we get in our lives is from people that just don't understand us and is not particularly helpful. I think that's a common, I'm going to go by the people that come to my office and discuss relationships. That's a common thing that happens. And so I think this point maybe is that critique or praise, none of it means it's true. Just because people like it doesn't mean it was right. And just because people don't like it doesn't mean it was wrong. These are only helpful in so much as they might be accurate verifiers of the correctness of our path or that we need corrective court, right? Does that make sense? I mean, they might be true, they might not be true. It depends. Who says that person that clicks like is right and they're like? And for every person that likes, there's the people that don't like. So, okay.
I apologize. Sometimes I get really stuck on the semantics around some of this stuff, but for me, if someone slights your dignity, that's not being left off a list.
Mm.
That's actually like an act of disrespect towards somebody. And I think that it's actually reasonable to be offended or have a problem with someone disrespecting you, which is for me different than not getting an honor.
So like an active act of disrespect versus an omission of praise.
Yes. Which I you know, what is a slight of dignity? That's kind of an ambiguous idea, but for me, it would not be being left off a list. It would be someone saying, "Oh, I don't care about your opinion." which I think actually would be problematic if somebody didn't care about my opinion. unless it was like a place where I had no opinion. Or no right to
an extremely humble person wouldn't care. If our goal is to be as humble as possible, then this wouldn't matter much. Just if that's the goal.
Is that the
and
goal?
Our humility lesson. Yeah. Actually, there was a role for knowing the right place for yourself.
So we actually defined anava a little bit differently. We defined it as a balance. What was the acronym? The phrase, the aphorism? No more than my place, no less than my space.
Yeah.
So that's from Alan Marinus, but I think it's helpful. Like Moshe is described as the most humble person there ever was, except that Moshe kills people, speaks up to tyrants, right? He's not exactly what we would imagine to be Mr. At times, yes. No, not me, choose someone else. But at times, like, let my people go and off with his head, basically. So those aren't the actions of someone who's just totally passive and quiet. So I think what we came with is an understanding that, like, this is who I am, an accurate understanding of what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And so to just know our place and not seek to have that be a grander place than it ought to be, but not also to shirk from a responsibility. Like if you are the talented engineer at the weapons factory, let's just say, and in this hypothetical, and you see that the team is doing everything wrong because they are bad at math, but you are good at math and know that they're wrong. It's not a matter of, and for you to be quiet then and say your math is to not correct their math is not humble. It's the opposite of humble, because your place is you know better. So there's kind of humility in this sense. The Rambam doesn't speak about it like that. The Rambam speaks about it in the way that people think about it, which is be quiet, meek, don't worry about anything else.
Yeah, that's kind of, in the workplace, women generally are more meek about their success than men. And what women are learning, being coached on, is to be, to be very assertive about where, they're giving themselves credit and moving up. And it's actually criticized in today's society, and that's, that men are, it's more natural for them to assert themselves and ask for promotions, which is not necessarily. You can be humble and ask for a promotion or ask to be recognized, but that's a weird line, because if you truly embody humility, you're not going to advocate for yourself. I'm just thinking about like a career situation. And maybe that, you look at Jewish history as well, the humility and meekness obviously was thrown out the window at a certain point that, with the state of Israel and everything that wasn't helpful. I mean, it's maybe it's a good value in human relations, but in terms of, being meek and humble wasn't necessarily, a good survival tool always.
So in that way, like the anti-Semitism marks that just happened in New York is kind of like an interesting marker of these midot on a national level, right? Think about like the other kind of humble response would be like, we're being attacked. The old Nitzelnach custom, like Christmas Eve, Jews tend to get attacked. So let's close down the synagogues and ban Torah study and just turn off all the lights. Let's just stay quiet, stay low, like basically in camouflage to the point that there became even a religious custom to ban prayer, public prayer in the Hasidic community. So like they wouldn't have Mara, they wouldn't have classes, right?
In Europe?
That was the custom that emerged, and it even became almost like a law in some communities. I would say it's not by and large observed here, but that would be like a meek kind of response, whereas the current response to a wave of anti-Semitism was a largely Jewish-led march of thousands of people over the Brooklyn Bridge. So that's like a different response, right? It's one that is humble, but it's the other definition of humble. This is like, we know our place, and our place is not to get assaulted on the street just for being Jewish or stabbed with machetes in a synagogue for lighting Hanukkah candles, right? So there's, I don't know, it's an interesting, this is also good that you bring this up, Elliot, because this does speak about how anava and kavod really do relate, right? The humility, anava, and dignity are pretty intertwined in a certain way. All of these midot like to separate them in some sense is like separating light colors in a rainbow.
I'm thinking of the math example. You could say, okay, guys, I'll help you. Or you could say, well, why don't you come to me at 4 o'clock when I'm less busy, and maybe I'll help you out.
Uh-huh.
So that's another two different ways of approaching it. It solves the same problem where one comes from, okay, I'll help. The other one is like, well, you got to come to me first.
Yeah. There's a good, won't go there. There's a good Gemara about that between Yeshayahu, the prophet Isaiah, and the Kohen Gadol. There's people talk about neither one wanted to go to the other. Okay. So maybe I'll try and bring that Gemara now. I was trying to find the Gemara and send it out. So, true kavod. Who would like to read? Volunteer to keep us reading the introductory essay, true kavod. Sure.
True kavod reflects an inner awareness of one's kedusha, one's holiness. That is the starting point. We are all holy, divine souls, and everything in this world has an element of holiness in it. The prophet Isaiah records the angels calling out, "Holy, holy, holy is the divine host. The entire world is filled with God's kavod." If we understand our inner holiness, we would act with kavod. Rabbi Wolbe expresses the concept in this way. Kavod is external behavior mandated by and appropriate to a reality of inner holiness. If we want to understand kavod, we need to open our hearts to sense the holiness in ourselves, in others, and in the world.
Do people understand that the verse that we say in Kedusha, in the also from Isaiah, right? Kadosh, 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 holy, 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 Hashem Tzvakos is the Lord of hosts, or here the divine host. Meloch ha'aretz kvodo, the whole world is filled with his kavod, with his glory, usually translated in that way. So here, Kedusha, God is holy because the whole world is filled with his kavod. And so what Rabbi Wolbe, we mentioned Rabbi Wolbe a lot because he's probably the most prominent recent Musar master in expounding on these texts and really a teacher to everyone who does Musar in this generation, that kavod in this sense is in relationship to Kedusha, that when you note the Kedusha, that it causes kavod, or that it ought to cause kavod as the way of acting towards it.
So he refers to kavod then as action.
Right. So interesting. Yeah. So, right. So you can't separate, like you can't honor someone, but not show it. Right. Like it has to be
internal.
Yeah. It's gotta be enacted. Yeah. That's a good point. Right. No, because a lot of times we think we're like honoring someone by thinking positive thoughts about them, but don't show it. Right. Because life is, how many people did I want to send nice notes to about things they did that were thoughtful and I never got around to it. And in my mind, I thought wonderful things about that person, but they don't know that. I didn't show kavod. All right.
I'm just wondering that for honor Hashem is at a whole other level of honoring. You can honor somebody 1 year, next year find out you did something bad, then your whole attitude towards it changes.
Right.
Hashem, that doesn't change or shouldn't
change. Right, right. Right. An interesting example would be like the Sacklers, so the producers of the Sardis, a pharmaceutical example, which is in everyone's industry these days. Right, their names are over every building, and then the opioid crisis comes about, and they're, you know, accused of sort of obscuring or hiding the dangerous effects of opioids, resulting in deaths of hundreds of thousands of people in a national crisis. And suddenly people are running to take their names off the sides of buildings, right? So, I mean, this would be an example of kavod, people who are tremendously philanthropic. Mm-hmm. And then it's discovered the source of the wealth of the philanthropy is, you know, paved in a lot of addiction. So,
How quickly should we rush to
church? Right, so I mean, right, and that doesn't take away from the things, right, the libraries and the schools and the books, all the things that were Sackler things, right, the same New England, we need to do this, 3 days after the Patriots, but the same thing happened with Bob Kraft a bit after the allegations about the massage parlor in Miami or whatever it was, right? you know, Bob Kraft has been a tremendous philanthropist, in particular to Jewish institutions in New England. And so does that. He was honored at Yeshiva University's rabbinical dinner last year. And then, so does that change all of the good work, or are we all human? You know, so, okay. So, but honor, so here's another question though, and this is part of the, is honor, so we're talking about different kinds of honor. One is honor, like, more than other people. We're choosing to honor you. The other is the basic dignity that people are afforded, not as a result of their situation, but as something inherent in being a person. And it doesn't matter if people are in jail, it doesn't matter where people are.
That's not honor, that's more respect.
Well, dignity. I mean, think about the Yosef story, everyone helping each other is in jail in this story, right, at some point. But they're all in a jail for crimes. False, not, but they're in the jail.
It is hard when someone commits a heinous crime and is hurt, and then he's in the hospital, or she, and the nurses and doctors have to treat that patient as they would any other patient.
Right.
And that's very, must be very difficult.
Right, and so in some ways that's a test of kavod, like the... All right, Jewish law. This is going to bring up all kinds of things. Yes, let's let it bubble up. The volunteer Jewish law is clear. Sure.
Jewish law is clear and detailed regarding the mandate to honor our parents. The Talmud states there are three partners in the birth of a child: the mother, the father, and God. The Ten Commandments are split into two categories: those dealing with human-God relations, like Shabbat, and those dealing with interhuman relations, like stealing. Honoring parents is included with those laws between people and God. The Talmud and the Torah signal to us that parents embody a certain holiness that is akin to God's holiness. For this reason, parents are the recipients of great kavod. Kavod connotes not only external behavior, but a pathway to spirituality.
So here, understand the meta lesson being drawn from the notion that honoring parents because of their creative role is like honoring God. He's drawing a much bigger lesson, which is that we think of interpersonal things as not a spiritual thing. There's like spiritual things, and that involves like meditation and song and prayer and other fun things like that. But that, you know, treating other people nicely or smiling at someone or just giving someone the time of day, that's an ethical thing, but not a spiritual thing per se. But so here's the countercultural point that no, it's these actions which are also spiritual.
I think when you treat people like that and you're recognizing, you know, their holiness, you're also seeing that everyone is, you know, connected. So I think that's where the spirituality comes in, and that's what a spiritual person would say: they're all connected. That's partially why God's in everyone. That's why we should give everyone respect. And so I think that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a problem with where it says the mother, the father, and God.
Yeah.
To me, where you're saying the mother and the father and God, it's almost like the Christian says the mother and the Holy Ghost or whatever they write.
Yeah, so I don't think it's meant to be like a Christian Trinitarian concept. You know, I think it's just...
But is there no way to express this differently?
That's how the Talmud says it.
Why do we have to change what we have because Christians have it? Why do we have to change what we have because Christians have it too?
No.
Possible Shai's saying that maybe they got it from us.
Yeah.
That's
right. In other words, I think the point here is just that, you know, there's you know, supernatural paths to creation, but there's also in the mother and the father in this case. So I think the Talmud's point is just also about the spiritual power of people, right? We often don't acknowledge, right, both spiritual power and responsibility, that when we do things, it might be part of kavod also. Most definitions of spirituality, step back. There's been a lot of studies of spirituality recently, because in the Pew study, most Americans identify as spiritual, not religious, but even among those Americans that identify as religious, more identify as spiritual than ever before. And so there's this move towards spirituality is important, but psychologists who wish to study this have struggled to define spirituality. Chief among them is probably Andrew Newberg, a professor of mine at the University of Pennsylvania, the psychology department there. I don't think he's there any longer, and he studies a lot of about religion, spirituality, and psychology. That's his field of study, but others as well. And in most of the definitions of spirituality they've come up with, it's been something like attributing more significance to an action than just what meets the eye, right? In other words, whatever the content is, be it Jewish content, Christian, or New Age spiritual, imbuing a particular action with other forms of deeper meaning. That what I'm doing here is meaningful beyond just what's this occurrence. It's in a context, like we're all connected. Mm-hmm. Or so I think that's as part of what we might mean when we say kavod connotes not only external behavior but a pathway to spirituality. I would maybe add a different thing, which is that I think kavod is inherent to a definition of spirituality. Heschel would have agreed with this as well. Heschel, in his long book God in Search of Man, a lot of that book, people have read that book, right? He talks about the sublimeness. That's what he's into for a while, a couple hundred pages, right? but sublime, making out the 90s band, but like that there's a, you know, deep meaning to things that occur, that was important to the Hasidic tradition, which he was coming to bear on. Okay. The first step in cultivating the Midah of Kavod. Who would like to take us there?
I can read it.
Okay, Ruth.
The first step in cultivating the Midah of Kavod, and indeed all spirituality, is comprehending one's own significance. Kavod comes from the Hebrew root, Chafvav Dalad, meaning heavy or weighty. Its opposite is Kaplamad, meaning light or insignificant. We need to perceive our own significance as made in the divine image. If we could fully integrate this truth, we wouldn't seek external recognition. We would treat ourselves with kavod out of an inborn awareness of our inherent value. How might your life look different if you had that awareness? I know that I would eat better, get more sleep, take on fewer projects, knowing that my significance didn't depend on anyone's approval. Spiritual growth is demanding and can challenge the ego. That is why it must be based on a firm sense of one's own worth. Lest one think that cultivating self-esteem is a contemporary phenomenon. Note that as early as the 13th century, Ravenna Yona of Gurundi declared that the path of spiritual growth starts with knowing one's own worth. He tells us to remember that we have glorious ancestors, Abraham and Sarah, Moses and Miriam, King David, etc. We should comprehend that we descend from great people and share in their inheritance.
This reminds me of my my father, you know, checking his DNA to confirm he was a Cohen and making jokes to his friend. You know, he just used it as a joke to say, well, what tribe are you from? You know, so, I mean, going back to the dignity piece, you know, the whole tribal thing is a little, you know, like one tribe is better than the other. And, you know, in Judaism, you're, you know, someone's divorced, a Cohen won't marry you. I mean, it's like, that's not really a great, you know, that's something from our heritage that actually doesn't promote kavod, you know? So that's what it made me think of.
Kind of related to that. So I had a friend who had parents and she really, they were terrible apparently. And she really struggled with this honoring your parents thing. And like, at what point are people held accountable? And is kavod like earned? But then conversely, I'm a little bothered by this notion that you have to come from great ancestry to be worthy of kavod. Like I think about, I don't know, people who grew up in abject poverty or something. So it's almost like a flip of the coin.
Yeah, that's it is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the way he's taking Rabbeinu Yonah is almost not exactly what it says. The Rabbeinu Yonah, you know, encourages people as an exercise to understand their own inherent kavod, to say, well, like, look who you're descended from. Now, like, immediately I'm thinking about, like, well, what about all the people who are not descended from those people, right? Like, everyone who's converted or, I mean, descended from other great people like Adam, everyone, but Eve, but...
So maybe it's just saying this is an example of some way you can look at your worth and assuming everyone in the room is Jewish.
I just want to highlight also, it may not be obvious, the importance of this concept to me. And I think I just want to frame it in light of a way in which the Jewish world sometimes operates presumptively. And that's that we can easily move from taking on new practices or observances or even musar, and this gets to Sally's comment right at the beginning, with a sense of like, I'm doing this and other people that aren't doing this are not good. And it's like natural. It's not like we try to do that, but right there becomes like with that, we can all go there and we can all hear other people say it sometimes, right? And to know that we were in a different place just a few weeks, months, years, whatever ago, right? But when we get to this place, then there's a tendency when doing any practice, be it meditation, be it Jewish observance, be it musar, to then look negatively on people not doing a particular thing, maybe. It's certainly common. And so I think this is where kavod can help as a check in our own spiritual practice, which is to say that one of the spiritual things we're working on is, right, that it shouldn't be about our ego, which is some kind of like, described as chametz in the Talmud Bavli, like a, no, it's all good, like a air puffy growth, right, of like leavened bread, which is not anything, but rather to look at the raw materials, which is to say that our own spiritual growth isn't about inflating our own sense of self. And in fact, it is about treating both us and all other people with a sense of dignity or honor or kavod. So as soon as we come to a place where we're learning Torah, we say, but look at those people. It's like, that's a sign that actually like it's not working on us fully, right? Rav Kook is, I think, for me, the best example. Someone who was able to embody this radically, where he was able to look at people, both people to his religious right who denigrated him frequently, as they did, sometimes by throwing feces at windows on him or other things, and still respect their writings and rulings, which I think most of us, like, if other people threw feces at me regularly, I would have a hard time, like, being really respectful of those people. And at the same time, he was very respectful, like, and viewed secular settlers of the land as people who had a lot to teach him and others, not just in a nice way, but he viewed them in a holy way. So I think there's that sense that it should lead to a sense of kavod, of respect for other people. Now, kavod could mean critique, coming back, right? Kavod doesn't have to mean just adoring love for everything everyone does, but sometimes respecting a person means respecting their intelligence enough to tell them that you think that they might consider a different way. That can be also a form of respect. It can be a form of non-respect. So we all been not respectful of people. We don't treat them seriously by not critiquing them. That's a form of not valuing someone in a certain way. Like, they're not important enough for me to spend my time to tell them I think that. So, but it's about kavod, you understand? The kavod is the principle.
There's a fine line between self-respect and haughtiness.
Yeah.
It's like a
sure.
pot of water.
Well, right, and we're always going to be on that line. So that's like that's why this is a practice. That's why it's a good description. This is a practice. It's a fine line between thinking well of oneself and thinking a lot above of oneself.
You're above other people.
Just something. My thoughts around this heritage stuff too is that it's I think it's interesting that there's oftentimes this jump to, if you honor your heritage, it means you're somehow saying it's better than other heritages, which isn't necessarily follow. So you can say, I am so grateful to be from these great people, and it doesn't mean that other people aren't from other great people too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's right. Because there's no part of that that's mm-hmm. saying, and these people are better than everybody else's people. Mm-hmm. It's just saying that I have some great people that I come from. And probably everybody has great people. So like everyone in the world has the opportunity to say, I have some great people that I'm from.
Like, it depends what you define as great.
That's actually the discussion question, exactly.
The people who don't necessarily make a splash in life or have, you know, done anything, excuse me, extraordinary, but the values that they gave you and the, you know, the ethics that you require from them, that's also. I also wanted to say the, I don't know this lady's name.
Allison.
Allison. When you talked about being a Kohen, you know, your body is Kohen, sometimes I think that coming from that kind of Yichud, or it's not, a lot of people are Kohanim or Bat Kohanim, but sometimes it's a burden rather than something you want to.
Because
it comes with certain responsibility mm-hmm.
to be called to the Torah.
Have you ever heard people say that Kohanim are a better tribe?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I come from a liberal background, so maybe that's kind of the interpretation of, you know, lack of really setting the text. But I mean, you know, I mean, I know that there's certain rules around, you know, Kohanim marrying women. I don't think I don't think a man is stigmatized for getting divorced if he's a Kohen. It's a woman who is. And so, you know, only certain people are good enough, you know, for a Kohen. So
well, that's an addition.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could just say it's just more restrictive of who they can marry, but it seems like it's a superior status.
Yeah, I would add that I think like the Kohen coming first and things, you know, suggests a superiority of status.
Have you ever heard it said that Kohanim are a better tribe than other Jews?
I mean, I think today people would shy away from that formulation, but people also shy away from emphasizing the role of the Kohen generally. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that when I was in like a yeshiva environment, and so a Kohen would like get their food first online at the cafeteria.
Sure, but that's like you give honor to old people. I don't think we should go around thinking that old people are better than
others. No, but like there, in that case, at least that Kohen was a piece of work. Like, I do think that there's a clear sense of like first equal most important. It's not just like you happen to be first, this is a random number we've chosen, right? It's that there's a superiority. Now, it could be that superiority is based on a role that's perceived as important, right? Like, for sure, I'm a rabbi, so that's the modern version of that role in some sense. It's different. Rabbis teach, right, versus Kohanim served in the avodah in the temple. But there's a sense of...
There used to be teachers.
But, like, I get some honor around here sometimes. And being very candid for a moment, like, there's a sense in which that can also serve to establish communal values about the importance of particular roles, which can be helpful to... I'm not saying in a self-serving way. My point is that, like, if we want to, like, for anything, you know, doctors are treated with a certain amount of respect in a hospital setting, because in the hospital you want to establish that the doctors have authority, because it's a set, hopefully it's a setting where, like, medicine, so,
yeah.
Or, like, similarly in militaries, right, there are hierarchical structures that are crucial to the successful functioning of the military units, so...
Yeah, but it's true that we all assign certain people more respect. I actually just listened to something yesterday where some doctor had given someone, you know, 3 months to live or something like that, and the person went to like a spiritual, you know, healer or something, and they were, you know, telling them, and the person went in the other room, put on a white jacket, and said, you know, you're fine, you're gonna live, and this is my sort of recommendation, and yeah, because I have a white jacket on, you know, like that gives them certain those people more authority, okay. When we all know like doctors aren't always right.
I mean, I think though there's a distinction between giving respect for an occupation or a thing, then saying that that person or that occupation is better, is a higher level of, I mean, I think there's a, it's a nuance, but I think there is a difference.
Well, yeah, I mean, do we don't, you know, people say don't give the doctors and home cleaners, you know, the same respect, or they should, you know, really.
I do.
Right, but I mean, society doesn't.
I try to.
Yeah, we all, you know, we all do, but we probably have a different, you know, process in our mind. We're going into the doctor's office, you know, like, oh, it's the doctor.
Right.
You know.
But would we think he's a better?
Yeah.
He's
better?
Really?
Oh, I mean, I think, to that going first, it's, actions mean something. So
we don't pay them as much. So
if someone gets paid more, if someone gets paid less, it doesn't matter how you treat them. To a certain extent, you're valuing one over the other. If someone gets to go first in line, they do have a higher value. Whether you say it or not, whether you use your mouth to say I'm valuing you more, you are valuing them more through the activity. So
That's what's so weird about teachers, you know, why they're not, you know, especially, I mean, you know, in Judaism, we value education so much, but I mean, I don't know how much teachers in the Jewish schools get paid, but they're not generally the highest income.
But it's made up for by the societal
reason. There are three aspects. Let us come to Benzoma. Okay. Benzoma, the paragon of wisdom. This has now touched everyone personally almost. Okay. That's okay. Hopefully people will take them the right way, whatever that is. There are three aspects to kavod practice. Kavod for oneself is described in the paragraph above. Kavod for, and that's right, important. And I just want to say something. Like, I'm a big believer in adding science to Torah or mixing them. In a way the Rambam would hopefully be proud of, but not with Aristotelian metaphysics, but like modern psychology, that's my favorite thing. So Marty Seligman wrote the book on another pen. I went to the right school for psychology, I didn't realize in college. He wrote the book, that book is about children and self-esteem. What's it called? Does anyone remember? No, no. Am I the only one who read that
book?
What's
the name?
Martin Seligman's book on self-esteem in children.
I want it now.
Not his book, Learned Optim. So his main point there is that actually you cannot teach self-esteem, right? And so this was a critique of, like, in a study form of the California schools in his book. Basically, the California schools are like the devil in this book because they decided to undo all their curriculum and teach self-esteem. And so what his research showed conclusively and a lot of other research was that you actually don't teach self-esteem. What you teach is you teach people to be able to have persistence and
about grit.
It was about grit, but it's about how grit is the building block of self-esteem. Namely, most of us fail at things in life, and it's when we have a sort of narrative style that allows us to try again or recover that eventually we learn to get better at things through practice, trial and error. And then have success. And actually self-esteem is built through success. And we actually handicap people's ability to have, it's not built through telling people they have self-esteem. Self-esteem is demonstrated to people when they succeed at a particular thing. And he feels it's important for everyone to find things they are good at. Everyone is good at something. And to get better also at things. And that's being good at something and also getting better at things are crucial for self-esteem. We actually handicap people's ability to have self-esteem by giving false praise or fake self-esteem building things like, oh, don't worry, you're a great athlete, when in fact someone is a terrible athlete. So because people then learn that people feel bad about themselves because they judge themselves against a sort of fake statement.
Trophies for participation.
Right. So those would be, in that case, bad. So I just want to say that there's a lot of research that has not only justified that, but even found that it's more true than he found subsequently. So I'll just say that about kavod for oneself. Kavod for oneself, I think, and this is my add-on, because I'm doing this, if I get to say, is that I think it is best found when we find things we're good at or learn to get good at particular things through practice. So that's the best way, in my opinion, to build kavod for oneself. I do think that is scientifically validated, if we're going to say that. And if you're not feeling great about yourself, I think a lot of times finding something you can improve at, be it an instrument or a martial art or whatever, where you like practice and you're not good at the beginning, you get better, and they improve, and also your skills in other areas of life could be good ways to build kavod for oneself. Okay, kavod for others and kavod seeking. So Ben Zoma teaches in Pirkei Avot, a long list of teachings that are subversive. Ezohu mechubad, who is honored or honorable? And mechabed tabriot, one who honors, in that sense, creatures. That's the teaching. But here, one who honors others is the translation. So you understand the subversive. You think one is honored as someone who's given a lot of honor. But actually, a person who is honored is someone who's honoring others. You can also maybe think of people who are really good at giving honor to others, like making other people feel, giving them the time of day. Right? Like there are particular people, I think most of us know, are really good at that. Maybe it's you. Honoring others is a kind of diagnostic. Someone who can recognize the holiness of the other is one who has a connection to her own holy soul. In contrast, someone want to give us the negative contrast of this?
In contrast, Rabbi Elazar HaKapar
says,
three things drive a person from the world: jealousy, base desires, and kavod. Rabbi Elazar is describing kavod seeking. Rav Kook teaches that it is only when a person is in a state of low-level spirituality, he will experience a desire to glorify himself before honoring others. Such a person will seek honor both through the virtues he possesses and with other virtues that he does not possess. When we need and seek recognition from others, it is a sure sign that we lack a deep sense of our own holiness and kavod. It's deep. Mm-hmm. Oh, you want me to be
the So let's just, we'll open it up, maybe. What do you think it means to be driven from the world, right? This teaching of Elazar HaKapar is that these things, jealousy, kina, ta'ava, base desire, and kavod, drive a person from the world.
Separate them from everyone else.
Okay, so they cause a separation of, right, they cause divisiveness.
Of themselves from others. You're saying it causes divisiveness.
Oh, and you're saying it causes the person to self-separate. Like if they have negative feelings to others, they won't engage with them.
But you're a consequence.
What does that mean, drive a person from the world? What is that? Is it, does that mean from humanity?
Is it from God?
From life?
They're thinking about themselves and not anybody or anything
All right, okay, I didn't thought about that, but it could become so self-absorbed that they're sort of like ruminating away and missing life, kind of like sitting there and stuck in anger.
Seems like a form of death in a way, like when you talk about he's not of this world, like the tendency kind of passed on. So in a way, it feels like a spiritual death in a way.
I like that. Like locally, it's like three things are a killer.
Yeah.
Three things just
stressful.
Deal breakers if you're going to exist here.
Wouldn't it make more sense to say kavod seeking?
Yeah,
right. I think he's
that's what he meant, I guess.
Yeah, he's trying to say, like, you know, how come in one place, like, kavod is good? He said, mechubad, it's good to be mechubad, to give kavod to other people, so it's bad for them to receive kavod. The answer is, like, no, it's not kavod in and of itself. It's not bad to accept, you know, when we ask you, please be the honoree at the shul dinner if you make it there, right? We're hoping you'll be that person. That's not the point. The point is that, you know, if, like, you want that, that's really what you want, then. And we all want that in some way, right? Like sometimes.
Well, that's the problem. And the people who seek it, you know, when you look at politicians or business leaders, you know, if they're not connected or they're not to humanity, then there are leaders, you know?
Right.
Because like politicians, right, they're people seeking attention and power. And so that's why that's what we get, the leaders that we get.
You can't be a politician unless you...
Well, so everyone, right, so there are a lot of good jokes about politicians and a lot of bad politicians. But so this is good. Maybe we'll, you know, if we want to personify, I love personifying midot. So here, kavod, at least unhealthy kavod, could be the politician in everyone. You want to think of your inner politician. Mm-hmm. And that could be a deeply offensive notion to you, maybe. So, well, not that there aren't good politicians, but
when I think about being driven from the world, it also for me is like about our relationship to like the physical world. But I feel like that's partly why we act destructively towards the world. It's like when we're chasing
a base desire.
Yeah, like, or jealousy, like you want more than somebody else, so you're gonna like go cut down more trees even though you don't need to cut down more trees because it's gonna get you more stuff. And I feel like maybe searching for honors probably functions similarly in a way. Mm-hmm. Rulers want to amass more power and more, they need to do destructive things to the world. Mm-hmm.
Someone has to said that this is the next one.
I don't know. I think the Svasemas in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, but I'm not sure. I recall something like that once. On this. But I could be wrong.
Can you say more about that?
I was just thinking that someone would have to interpret these things.
But does that resonate for you, like that, like not just this world, but like from all worlds, including like other lives, afterlives?
Yeah, that you won't be able to live a proper life here. That will not be. I'm just guessing somebody else can interpret that way.
I think it's also worth citing in. Like the effect of social media and kavod, right, which is a whole new like topic, but I think is maybe we were starting actually with the discussion of Instagram, and but maybe this is a good way to start. Instagram has recently changed its. People know about this, you know, so Instagram and thinking about how to deal with the spate of teenage suicide and depression, but it's really not just a teenage problem, but it's a particular teenage problem. So now on a picture, the person won't see how many people like their own picture. So oh, you could find it out. Other people would see. But it's not obvious if they've changed the algorithm. So like if you have put a picture up of yourself, you will not see how many people like that picture, period.
Wow.
Other people will see how many people like your picture, but you won't.
What's your idea behind it?
So to disincentivize people's posting for kavod, right? In other words... And then the heartbreak that can come, particularly for teenage girls. Mm-hmm. I think there's an op in the New York Times about this today, with sort of being less liked than others. Mm-hmm. or less popular, which is magnified in the social media context, whereas once it, and now it's quantifiable. Uh-huh. 1,000 people like their picture and only 3 people like my picture. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just a few steps away from there and a few bullying episodes to being in a state of extra depression. So Instagram is actually doing something of changing the algorithm. Oh,
that's amazing.
Right, but I mean...
It still seems like, you know, person A will say, oh, 4,000 people like hers, but yours, but only 2 people.
Right, no, I mean, so it's an intermediate step, right? It's not as if they've foregone things that will increase profit dramatically to do this, but it is a move in recognizing that kavod is what's at play here really for people. And the whole exercise, right, of like posting something and then wanting to know how many people care is in fact a form of ego seeking. It's like an ego gratification move. It could be you want to say something, but there's that part of it that's there.
Doesn't Amazon do that with books?
Right.
You actually see where you are.
I mean, and the rise of sock puppetry is another version of this, right? Where people post frequently, authors right. post positive reviews of their own works in pseudo names on their reviews. And a lot of them justify it as I'm trying to sell my book, right? I'm trying to promote it. And so I, you know, creating fake email accounts to say good things about my book. But some of it surely is to create a cascade of people that like their books. It's, look, a million people like my book. And so then to feel like a million people like me. So I think here are what we're trying to get to, right, is that all of us have that instinct to some degree or another. And to sort of note that and realize that that's not our best way of living, right? And in fact, our best way of living is to honor others, but to live with a sort of acceptance of ourselves.
You should like everything you see.
Well, so your kavod practice, this is going to bring
everything
me now to some...
The devil tap.
So the conclusion is that Revolvi felt that this is one of those things that the more you practice it, the better. Not unlike Staka, but the Rambam says if you're going to give $1 million, it'd be better to give like $1 million one time, and as opposed to $1 million check, would be good. But better like Lubavitcher Rebbe did, to give $1 million $1 bills and to give a check for $1 million. And why? Because then you get accustomed to doing the act of charity. Right, so you could talk about the effect of the charity, but some of it is about accustoming ourselves to act in a particular way. So I'm only sort of joking, right? Like if you got accustomed to signing up to social media, just indiscriminately liking everything anyone posted, right? But really coming to like appreciate what that person said about it, even if you disagreed, right? It would be an interesting Kabbalah, right? To try and come to an appreciation of things people say and just like it, even if you don't agree, even if you don't want to be associated with it, and just say like, I understand why you're saying that, and I appreciate that, I like that, right?
It's like everybody getting the same trophy, right?
Well, okay, or maybe not. So maybe that's not kavod, right? Maybe really kavod is to say you're smarter
than
me.
We tried that. It didn't work for our kids' generation.
So, no, it's... okay, so some kavod practices, right? Marty Seligman said that was horrible.
Right?
So...
We're loving
it. Some focus phrases. Possibility, you could think of your own. But I like Ezo Hum Mechubad and Mechabedet Abriot, who is honorable, one who honors others. I think that's a really nice focus phrase. That is
short.
Rabbi Volpe has some other suggestions on page 108. Ben Azahi, as you say, Altihi Vaz the Chol Adam is a particularly nice saying. Ben Azza used to say, do not be scornful of any person and do not be disdainful of anything, for you have no person without his hour, no thing without its place. Right? Everything has its value in life. Everything. That's another good one, though it is not short. A kavalot. So depends what you feel you want to work on. This is an area for self-discernment. Do you feel like you need to appreciate your own value first? Right? If you're in a place where you find yourself constantly seeking the praise of others, it might be good to start with yourself and to come to a, right? So that could be, and this would be good, to notice yourself doing something good. This would fit with the Martin Seligman approach to life, which is that self-esteem is built through achievement. Right, and so to every day, pat yourself on the back at least once. That would be the kavod practice in that sense. Another possibility, if that's not your issue, it's recognizing other people, would be to notice someone else doing something good once a day. To say, wow, you know that, and I would even add to go beyond that and maybe compliment them. Wow, you're really good at that thing. A harder practice is to take someone that we all might not treat with the same kavod and treat them with that kavod for a period of time. So I once tried this during like a cycle like this with beggars on the street, meaning not to like do the fake pity or the look away or the look or whatever, but to like get out of the car, park it, stop and say hello and treat them like I would treat anyone else. Like, and not here's a candy bar or here's an apple or even here's a sandwich, but like, how is your day? What's going on? To treat them. So that would be the like hard version of this practice. We had a lot of time, which would be really interesting.
Have they ever asked you to switch places?
Some interesting conversations, let me tell you. Almost everyone was a veteran, which was another, but that was that's what I learned, right, is that everyone I spoke to during that period had served in the Army, or at least they said they had, and I had no reason to doubt
it. People on the street?
Yeah, and that led to a whole different thing about, like, what does it mean to be free or to support wars or not, or whatever. I'm not trying to make it political, but, like, when you realize how many of the people who are homeless on the street are veterans, which is most of them, so then...
Jabhat is doing a major thing. Did you see
it? No.
They've got this huge truck with a freezer and refrigerator, and people are contributing all sorts of items of clothing, food, things, and they're going because they discovered that just going to lots of people, veterans, it's geared to veterans, can't come to veteran centers and so on. So they're going out to people. And it sounded beautiful.
Yeah.
Jablot has done a nice job.
There's also that, similarly, there's that, what is it called? Shower to Empower.
Yeah. You know,
Shower to Empower. Yeah. They're going around with
showers.
Yeah, there are trucks with showers and they go around so that people on the street should, and they have barbers and other things, so you can get like a haircut and, and things, right? So do one thing each day that demonstrates kavod for yourself. If you're feeling like kavod for myself, come on. I just draw your attention to the broken window effect, which is a known sociological phenomenon, which is that in neighborhoods with a lot of broken windows, when you fix broken windows, you see improvements in all the other metrics in those neighborhoods, test scores and job performance, all kinds
of... In New York, when they clean the graffiti off.
Right, they fixed broken windows, and it had a measurable
amazing,
effect. And what is it about the broken window effect that, right, and our sense of kavod that affects everything else? You begin to realize the sense in which this. So, okay, there's a lot more to say and talk about, and there are so many more sources, which is why it's great that there's some time until our next session, so people can learn. But more than even the learning, I think the integration is the crucial piece here, which is finding a phrase and hopefully a practice that can be done on a daily basis that you can hold yourself accountable to doing. And I guess I apologize if we've gone about 10 minutes over. I should treat you with kavod and not abuse the time privilege. But I wanted to thank everyone for attending this session. If anyone has a closing question, comment, or anything else they'd like to say.
I loved what you said just now about giving a dollar to it rather than we used to make fun of my father because he would give like a dollar, $5, and then he'd get all these things in the mail from 1,000 charities.
He would give like a dollar to every charity.
And, you know, but now I feel better about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was the Rambam suggested approach because it's like about accustoming oneself to saying yes to charity.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Rambam didn't know about computerized lists. That's true. And selling them to other charities.
Well, that was sort of before then.
So I wanted to thank everyone for coming tonight. It's always been a pleasure to learn with you all. If anyone here who is new doesn't have a chavruta and wants one, or anyone who is here had a chavruta that isn't, let me know so that I can match you with someone.
Yeah, my partner is not gonna participate anymore. So.
And are you looking for a new chavruta?
Yes.
Great. We will find you someone.
Is this the same packet that we had originally?
Yeah.
Okay. So
and does anyone need a packet? I realize I meant if anyone needs a packet that it doesn't have.
I don't have one, but how much?
What? I can. No, it's just free.
It's free.
Thank you to Jonathan Templeton Foundation.
Yeah, the Templeton Foundation has paid for these packets. The Templeton Foundation. Oh, gosh.
Did you hear what they said about Apple last night at the, what is it, yesterday?
Low Coding Clubs.
Yeah, they just, and I guess Apple has a new program.
I'm going to stop the recording. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.